DavidRenicky.com. It's one of my favourite websites. The man himself is even better. David, post-Easter, you're feeling a bit fat after Easter Bunny's visit, or did you control yourself?
Well, look, you must have. You haven't got FaceTime, have you? You must be watching me. No, I'm out of my cage now. They've let me out to talk to you, but I've got to go back in. We're doing the isolation thing like everybody else, and I will be very glad when it's over. Yeah,
we all want to make some money, and I want to know how you earn six figures to protect the Earth from aliens. Sign me up. What do I need to do, mate?
That's easy. You could give your job up tomorrow. You fit straight into this.
Yeah.
This is a new job that you or all your listeners or anyone can actually apply for. And it's a reality now. It would have been science fiction 10, 15 years ago. It's called Planetary Protection Officer, PPO. And you can fill your application out now and send it in.
This is not a joke. Are you saying NASA are doing this?
Yeah. The government, actually. Well, NASA is part of the government. This is put together by the administration, the American administration. The position is a high-ranking one. The pay is very good. You're getting $187,000 US a year. But you've got a mission there to protect Earth from alien contamination. Now, that's easy. That's not hard to do. What you've got to do is you've got to make sure that we, human beings, don't contaminate any other planets, moons, or anything else in space there when you go up to the space station. You've got to get your cloth out and make sure, like we're doing now, to make sure there's no bugs up there.
Well, that means all of us have plenty of practice, and if we're, mopping down everything we're touching, this is good.
We have. And also to avoid any unwelcome extraterrestrial microbes that might be coming in to planet Earth, courtesy of our little experiments picking up bits of rock and bringing bits of asteroid back and bits of comets back. So your job, as the treaty states there, there's a treaty that you can't own any celestial real estate, but you've got to have certain qualifications, which I'm sure that you'd find. I'm sure that you'd fit into something. You must have an advanced degree in science.
Oh.
Now, if you haven't got that, engineering or mathematics would be a next best.
Well, I did general mathematics, maths and society.
Well, good enough, yes.
Okay.
You've got to have experience as a top-level government employee. You've got to have technical engineering know-how. You've got to have advanced knowledge of planetary protections, which you can learn from a book. They give you the book. And you need skill in planning, supervising, executing space missions of significance. What happens is they stick you into a helicopter or a plane and they fly you all around the world. You go to Europe, you go to all the American space centers, you visit all the facilities, and you make sure that they're complying with their cleanliness requirements. Because we can't, when we send a spacecraft to another world, we've got to make sure it's clean. We don't want to land it on Mars or another world or a moon or somewhere where we've got bugs on it. And when we go and find that life there, we might think, oh, this is alien life. But it's really life bought from planet Earth. You cannot completely clean a spacecraft. We know that. The idea behind this is to reduce the odds as much as we can. So now we have a space force. Trump has put into operation a space force in America, which is an arm, it's an offshoot, an arm of the Air Force. We've also got now a position for a planetary protection officer.
A PPO.
Your job is to make sure we don't get any bugs or viruses. God knows we don't need any more, but especially ones that come in from outside, and we don't want to send our bugs that we've got here to any other world.
Exactly. DavidRenicky.com has more if you're keen on, following the protocols needed for that job. I mean, it may be out of reach for a lot of us, but there is hope in this time of trying to make some extra money. Speaking of money, NASA are funding a telescope. Is it on the far side of the moon? Is that so we can see from there or onto there? What they mean by this?
Well, mainly it's occlusion. I mean, the best thing you could do is you've got a radio telescope is to put it in the quietest part of the globe you can. And that's why Parkes Radio Telescope, when it was installed, it was stuck in a sheep farm out in a property down in Parkes in New South Wales. This is a new idea that has got an old component to it. Was sort of jockeyed around 40, 50 years ago when it wasn't possible. But now, the US Space Agency now has got 23 revolutionary concepts on their books. One of these is the new successful idea, or a successful idea that on paper works out, of putting a radio telescope on the other side of the moon. We don't build it. It's already there. one of the craters on the moon there. They've already got the disc shape to it. The idea is to find maybe a crater around 3 or 4K in diameter and string across it a wire meshing. That wire meshing could be pulled taut to form the basis of the dish itself. And in the middle, you've got a radio suspended receiver in the center. And you you keep it on the moon there, and you could probably steer it to a degree. But this would be great because there's complete silence on the moon. You don't have... Well, radio telescopes don't like radio stations.
No, it's true.
They don't like television stations or anything like that because there's interference coming through. And by putting it on the backside of the moon, you've got complete seclusion, quietness, and even you can't be detected by any other group of people that may want to listen in on what you're doing or whatever. But there you go. That's what it's all about.
Well, even that Parkes radio telescope now would certainly have to be getting all sorts of interference from, you know, Wi-Fi and, you know, CB radio signals. I mean, the population of Parkes surely has expanded out that far. I know it's still 20 Ks or whatever from town, but it's a lot closer than it was. Have a look at that.
It's suffering because of the increase in commercialisation around it, buildings, and there are radio stations nearby, and you've got CB, you've got the shortwave. There's too much, but look, this is just an idea, I think, whose time has come. And the idea here is it can be extended to a crater 50 kilometres in diameter. Can you imagine a dish that big? With things like this, with ideas like this, we'll be able to do amazing things with it. We can pick up stuff that we can look at planets around other stars. These sort of things will be probing exoplanets in detail in a way that we've never been able to do before.
I love it. DavidRenicky.com has more on that too, by the way. Can I ask you about this? The 50th anniversary of Apollo 13 is coming up. What date have we got that set for?
Oh, this is an amazing story. 50th anniversary of Apollo 13. It actually was happening around this time. The boys came back. Of course, Apollo 13 was the ill-fated mission to get three astronauts onto the moon.
Great movie.
But 50 years ago now, the mission turned out to be anything but routine. And, of course, we know that it suffered a gigantic explosion partway between here and the moon. And what the explosion turned out to be, seemed to be a canister that had exploded and blew the side of the spacecraft out. Well, oxygen was leaking out. Everything was going wrong there. And the whole world held their collective breath. What are we going to do? NASA worked with their people and worked with the crew there by radio, and they tried to work out a way to keep these folks alive long enough so they can get back to Earth in the lunar vehicle. I think they got into the lunar module. The command module itself is no good. So they got in there, but there was only a limited amount of oxygen, and there was all the power there had to be conserved, so that was all turned off. There was no heating. They were freezing cold, and their technicians back at Houston, there in Texas, were working feverishly on ideas based on everything they knew they had in the cabin. Rolled tubes of cardboard, bits of paper, duct tape, you name it, so they could come up with ideas on how to recycle some of the carbon dioxide or gosh knows what else. I really can't remember. It's so long ago now that all I do remember is the hype. It just gripped the entire world. And none more so than the time they came back here. Now, we knew that they'd survived the re-entry or close to the outside of the atmosphere of the Earth. The radio communication there and said that the boys were in reasonably good condition. But would they survive coming through the atmosphere? Were the parachutes going to open? And what condition were they really in since last communication? Had the oxygen run out? There was a blackout. They couldn't get any communication going between ground and the capsule. Now, I remember those minutes where we watched on television the ship in the ocean there to pick them up. Everybody on deck with binoculars. The whole world, people were crowded around TV sets, not only in their homes, but also in shopping centres and schools. The entire world watched this that came through live. And you must remember watching that. All of a sudden, the tension was broken. We were waiting for it. We listened for it. The capsule communicator was not sending anything back. There was nothing coming back from the spacecraft. Houston was saying, "Do you read me, Apollo 11? you know, come in, etc. Nothing. Nothing was coming back. And the faces became very, very grayed and drawn, and realised that there may be some problem here. These boys may not. We may not get them back. And then the moment came when the whole world just exploded in an uproar. There are these three brilliant red and white parachutes that opened up in the sky there. Everybody breathed a sigh of relief when we saw that, because we knew that we've got them back. Mm.
Sounds like it was yesterday for you, David.
Sorry?
Sounds like it was yesterday for you.
Yeah, well, you can remember, you've seen it so many times, and you read about it, which I do, and you get asked about it so much that you do remember a lot of the details. But it was a time that will never, ever happen again. It was a time when the entire world was galvanised. Even the Soviet Union had their fingers crossed for these fellas, and we got them back. One of the greatest rescue moments in history, that one.
One of the greatest movies as well, with Tom Hanks. I'm just thinking, with the 50th anniversary, could there be another angle they could do as a tribute? But I suppose Hollywood shut down at the moment, so nothing will be coming out of there for the moment.
Well, that movie was pretty accurate compared to what happened. That Ron Howard movie was absolutely brilliant. Mm. The scenes in that, the sequences, and the way that it was all done and told was pretty much like when it happened.
I still think the best movie I've ever seen is The Martian. I mean, that, the fact that a human survived, I know it's fantasy, but a human survived and came back from Mars, and he managed to live on there for over a year, because it does highlight how far we are from Mars. And when we get out of synchronous orbit, it just becomes a massive trip. I just think it's a brilliant movie. Speaking of movies, one last thing, David.
When you think about it, you know, that's a 7 month journey for us.
Oh God, yeah.
7 months.
Conventionally
away.
Speaking.
Well, in spacecraft terms,
One final thing, David. We have a ancient comet heading our way. In fact, it could be the last time we see it.
This is interesting, because it may not happen. Unfortunately, this comet is starting to break up. Well, it appears to be breaking up. Comet Atlas hasn't been seen for 5,500 years. The last person to see this, or the last people, were the ancient Egyptians. It came by planet Earth 1,000 years before the Sphinx was made, and 2,000 years before Stonehenge. And it's on its way here. But everything is not as it seems. What astronomers are looking at now is the fact that this may have broken up. It appears to have fragmented into 10 bits. Now, 6 of those pieces are still rotating around the nucleus. It still may be intact enough for us to see it in full colour when it does get here, and full brightness. But there's also the chance that it may completely break up before it comes close to us. It's circling the sun now. It's getting hotter and brighter, and it is due here at the end of this month, early May. So let's keep our fingers crossed. If it does appear in our sky, it'll be the brightest thing you've seen for a long time, next to the moon. It'll actually rival Venus in its brightness. You might even see a nice little tail there with green and blue colours in it. I don't know. But it's time we had something good like this in the sky. And if it does occur, it'll happen in a few weeks' time. I'll let you know as we go.
DavidRenicky.com. Bookmark their website. Get it linked up so you've got access to it all the time. Because I won't give out David's phone number. Not unless he pays me to. All right, till next week, mate.
Thanks. Okay, bye-bye.